Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Connie reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, August 13th, 2020. Midland Christian opens. The caption reads, Above. High school's principal, Jumon Haley, talks to students during Chapel Wednesday at Midland Christian. Below, students attend their first day back to school. See more photos at mrt.com and in future editions. City of Midland. Midland still headed to second largest sales tax collection. By Stuart Doreen. The City of Midland reported its third straight month of 20%+ sales tax decreases, but it is likely to still have the second largest sales tax collection of any year on record. The city announced Wednesday that the year-over-year drop in sales tax collected this month was more than $1.1 million. The $4.296 million collected was 20.97% less and followed drops of 29.45% and 23.70% in the collections from July and August, respectively. A collection represents spending from 2 months earlier. This month's collection is based on spending in June. The city also reports $48.549 million in sales tax collected through 11 months of the fiscal year. During just about any other year, that would be setting the city up for quite a collection. But this year follows the first $60 million collection in the city's history and the city's $52 million or $53 million pace, which would be good enough to be the second largest collection in the city's history, will pale in comparison to 1 year ago. It also won't reach the goal city leaders set for the year, $55 million. Through 11 months, the city is 11.8% behind the pace set last year. Still, the collection could have been much worse. There have been 8 straight months of sales tax decreases, and all but 2 of those were double-digit decreases. However, the city set a new record for sales tax dollars collected during the first quarter of FY 2020, and that provided a little buffer for the downturn that followed. A goal of $49.7 million in sales tax collected has been budgeted for fiscal year 2021. Sales tax report. August 2020. $4,296,701. August 2019. $5,436,686. The difference of negative 20.97%. Fiscal year to date, fiscal year 2020, $48,549,624. The fiscal year for 2019 was $55,041,818, a difference of negative 11.8%. Note, August collection is based on sales in June. Midland Development Corp is August 2020, $1,074,175. The fiscal year for 2020 is $12,137,406, a difference of negative 11.8%. County. Ramsey denies Johnson's claim he wants to raise tax rate. By Caitlin Randall. Midland County Commissioner Scott Ramsey on Wednesday strongly denied an allegation made by County Judge Terry Johnson that Ramsey was seeking to raise the property tax rate above the voter approval rate, saying that claim was nowhere close to true. Johnson posted on his Facebook page Tuesday evening that he believes the lawsuit filed against him by District Attorney Laura Nodoff is connected to Ramsey's intention to raise the tax rate above the 3.5% cap on year-over-year revenue, which would require an election. Ramsey told the Reporter Telegram he was livid about the post and said it had no basis in fact, reality, or anything. All he's doing is pulling this stuff out of thin air, he said. Nodoff filed a civil suit last week alleging Johnson failed to fulfill his duties as county judge by not filing a proposed county budget by the end of July. Local government code mandates the budget be prepared in July, but County Attorney Russell Malm has said the law does not set a deadline for filing the budget. When asked about his post, Johnson said he believes Ramsey influenced Nodoff to file the lawsuit because of concern over the timeline for adopting a tax rate that would need voter approval, which is required for a rate that would generate more than 3.5% property tax revenue than the previous year. The election code states the latest an election can be ordered to appear on the November 3rd ballot is 78 days prior to Election Day, or August 17th for this year. A tax rate would then need to be adopted by the Commissioner's Court by August 24th, 71 days before the November election, according to the tax code. It's unclear, though, when the earliest would be the Commissioner's Court could hold a public hearing to address the tax rate, which is required before it can be adopted. If it's above the no new revenue rate, the rate which would bring in the same revenue as the previous year. Local government code states the hearing must be after the 15th day of the month the budget was prepared. If the budget is prepared in July, the earliest a hearing could be held would be August 16th. However, if the budget is considered to be prepared in the month it was filed, as is the basis of Nodoff's lawsuit alleging the budget was filed late, then the earliest the Commissioner's Court could hold a public hearing on the tax rate would be September 16th, making it impossible for the court to meet the deadline for an election. Ramsey said he spoke to Nodoff before she filed her lawsuit, but denied that he influenced her decision. He said he advised her to speak to experts on county tax law and do what she felt was right based on the opinions of those experts. I'm a rules follower. I want to play by the rules, Ramsey said, adding he would accept whatever he determined is made by the outcome of the lawsuit. He said that although it would be crazy to raise the tax rate above the voter approval rate amid an economic downturn, he thought the commissioner's court should have the power to make that decision. He wants it to be one person that makes the decision, Ramsey said of Johnson. That's not right. Nodolf requested in the lawsuit for it to be mandated that the county judge file the county budget by July 31st in future years. She previously declined to comment on the suit in a statement to the Reporter Telegram, citing the ongoing litigation. A hearing on the suit will be held at 10 a.m. today in Midland County, 441st District Court. Politics. Conway. Trip to Permian made an impact on Trump. Congressman on COVID. Do smart things and get back at it and quit cowering. By Mella McEwen. At the end of July, U.S. Republican Mike Conway descended the stairs of Air Force One behind President Donald Trump as the president became the first sitting president to visit Midland since 2006. What a great trip, Conway said during the weekly Oilfield Strong webinar presented by OTI Compression, OTI Environmental, and the Permian Basin Petroleum Association. It actually had a big impact, he continued, telling PBPA Executive Vice President Stephen Robertson that area oil and gas operators had the opportunity to tell the president that $40 oil was not sufficient to help the industry return to its record-setting production levels. It was a good trip. It was good for him to come. It was impactful in that he came away with a new perspective on $40 oil, Conway said. He obviously is aware of the rig count dropping from over 900 to 200 is impactful. I was hoping to get him on the rig floor, but that didn't happen. The Secret Service is nervous about a president being on a rig floor, he continued. The industry has a good story to tell, but I'm preaching to the choir sometimes. My Democratic colleagues don't seem to want to listen, Conway added. He said the industry has been living the wreck that is the 1-2 punch of COVID-19 and also the Saudi Arabia-Russia battle over oil market control. COVID took the world economy down. Oil demand collapsed, and in the face of overproduction from the Saudis and Russia, prices collapsed. The Permian Basin experienced both sides. For the first time, we had to fight a pandemic at the exact same time as the price collapsed. Part of the problem in Washington, D.C. is that because these overlap, it was hard to help folks understand that during the pandemic, while all the U.S. suffered, the oil fields also had a separate, independent wreck. It was hard to distinguish the impacts, so getting things done was difficult. Conway pointed to efforts to ease the impact of demand destruction by buying oil for the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which he said was opposed by his Democratic colleagues. So there were efforts to reach an agreement to allow producers to store their oil in the reserve instead. Under the proposed Green New Deal, he said, they're working to do away with fossil fuels by 2035. 15 years from now, we'll be on horses or walking. There's nothing to replace fossil fuels. While gasoline and diesel are important, they're not all the industry does. It's plastic and lipstick, for goodness sake. They don't understand the application of the industry. The left hates the oil and gas business. There may be a utopia several centuries out where oil and gas are no longer needed. They are finite resources. But it's a long way off, and utopians ignore that altogether. They don't appreciate that America, its manufacturers, have an advantage because of low energy prices. From our Great New Deal standpoint, we can produce gas in Texas, ship it to the Gulf Coast, then ship it to Estonia, and reduce their carbon footprint to far less than the Russian footprint. The way we do things here are better from an ecological standpoint than the Russians. They're so misguided on every level. I don't see much change in that narrative on the Democratic side. Those who understand are drowned out and won't be heard, particularly during the campaign. Conway said there is too much focus on the total number of COVID-19 cases, which will never go down. We have 5 million cases, people who got sick in March, April, May, June, who got well or passed away, he said. For you and me, day to day, that's a negative. We need to focus on the active cases, the hospitalizations. Those are the markers we should focus on. The number of active cases in my district is 3,500. That plateaued the last few weeks. My district's hospitalizations are down. The total number of cases is discouraging at every level. The focus should be on how many are sick today, and that's what's important today. Said Conway, "These are hard times, and we've been through hard times before. We have to figure out how to deal with COVID without destroying all we know. We have to come to realize we have to power through, protect the most vulnerable. As we're starting school, reopening businesses, wear masks, wash our hands, sanitize, don't be around sick people. Have the discipline to stay home when you're sick, or if you're around family members who are sick. We have to take risks, smart risk, calculated risk, and get back at it," he said. "Be smart. If you have issues, stay away from crowds. Don't get the disease. It is unyielding, especially if you have diabetes or conditions like that. People who are healthy should get back at it. I'll get in the car later. That's a risk. Getting on an airplane is a risk. We're tougher than that. We settled this land in the face of incredible odds and made it work. That's our ancestry, our heritage. The healthcare system is much more. We have good results on testing of vaccines. There may be some therapeutics. Do smart things and get back at it and quit cowering." Off to Never Never Land. The caption reads, "Musicians Robert Trujillo from Left, James Hetfield, Lars Ulrich, and Kirk Hammett of Metallica perform at the Silver Lake Conservatory of Music Benefit at the Wiltern Theater on May 14, 2008 in Los Angeles. Metallica is pre-recording a concert that will be shown August 29th at drive-ins across the country, including at Midland's Big Sky Drive-In. The heavy metal band announced Monday on Facebook. Tickets for the show will go on sale at noon Friday on Ticketmaster.com. General admission tickets are $115 per vehicle, and only 6 people are allowed per vehicle. Metallica will be the first rock band featured in its new drive-in series, according to Ticketmaster. The concert will also feature a special performance from 3 Days Grace, according to the site. Tebow to speak at Youth Ministry Fundraiser by J.C. Lewis. Team Flow's annual fundraiser has another big-ticket football speaker. Tim Tebow will make his second trip to Midland to speak at the Lead Now fundraiser event for Team Flow. The nonprofit that has been working in Midland for 20 years hosted Drew Brees for last year's fundraiser. Maisel Martinez, a volunteer for the faith-based youth ministry, said the organization works with kids from fifth grade to their senior year. Martinez also was part of the program when he was younger. According to the organization's website, the Teen Flow Outreach Ministry is in its 19th year of reaching young people with the message of the gospel and helping prepare them for a godly and productive adulthood. More than 150 kids between the ages of 13 and 18 come through the doors on a weekly basis, and Teen Flow participants, many of whom are considered high risk, are infused with life skills, morals, and principles that will serve them all of their lives. The Teen Flow building and programs serve as a safe haven from a world full of temptation and pitfalls for young people in these times. Tim Tebow's story is worth admiring, Martinez said. He played college football, and when he played with the Florida Gators, his persona was to spotlight the verse John 3:16, which was kind of condemned by the NCAA. After Tebow wrote John 3:16 on his eye black during football games, the NCAA required players who wear eye black to use solid black with no logos, words, numbers, or other symbols, Martinez said. Tebow first visited Midland 8 years ago. His foundation also worked in Midland last year with Stonegate Fellowship Church and Mid-Cities Church to fund a Night to Shine prom, which let Permian Basin area adults with special needs enjoy a prom night. The prom was held February 8, 2019 at Stonegate. Tebow has been involved with faith-based organizations after his football run, Martinez said. Some of Team Flow's committee members have spoken to Tebow at other events. Martinez said a lot of the Midland students Team Flow serves are involved in sports, including a student athlete from Grady ISD that attends events. Tebow won the Heisman Trophy and his Gators won a pair of national titles. Our juniors and seniors are pretty excited for it, Tebow to speak, he said. The kids below those grades aren't as familiar with him. Sponsorships ranging from $1,250 to $7,500 are available. For more information, visit https://www.teamflow.com/events-1/lead-now. The event will be at the Bush Convention Center on October 8th and will have a live and silent auction. The money raised will go toward operational costs as well as possibly funding extra events or trips with the kids. We will have more money and more funds to do more things with the kids than just having Tuesdays and Thursdays, he said, doing more beyond the walls of Teen Flow. Under the picture, the caption reads, Tim Tebow signs his autograph on the back of a jersey for Gavin Cooper 10 of Midland on April 22, 2012, before speaking at the Rock the Desert Stonegate Fellowship event at Grande Communication Stadium. Steinmart files for bankruptcy with plans to possibly close all its stores. Dallas Morning News. Steinmart, which warned in June that it had substantial doubt that it could survive the pandemic, has filed for bankruptcy. The Jacksonville, Florida-based department store said it expects to close a significant portion, if not all, of its stores. The retailer operates 283 stores in 30 states, and its roots date back to a single store in Greenville, Mississippi, in the early 1900s. Midland Steinmart location is located at 4706 North Midkiff Road, number 1. Steinmart is the latest of a couple of dozen retailers that have filed for bankruptcy this year. Department store and apparel stores deemed non-essential through the spring in most states have been hit the hardest. Under the caption, firefighters respond to a possible fire at Midland Steinmart store in this 2011 photo. The retailer filed for bankruptcy and may close all of its stores. Where to catch live music this weekend? By J.C. Lewis. With bars closed in the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, rescheduling most shows or providing live stream performances, live music has been difficult to come by. Some Midland restaurants and event venues have started hosting musicians. The Cafe at the Gardens will host the Midlanders for dinner and live music on Thursday. Dinner begins at 5 p.m. and live music starts at 7 p.m. The Rusty Bucket Barbecue and Tavern will have Sundance Head on Friday. The Voice 2016 winner will perform at the restaurant and outdoor venue. The show begins at 9 p.m. and tickets are $10. The Destination Midland will have two live music nights. Weatherstone Classic Rock will play a collection of jam, fun, classic rock Friday. Tickets are $8. The show begins at 7. Jody Nix and the Texas Cowboys will play Saturday. Tickets are $20 and the show starts at 7 p.m. Max BBQ and Catering has Brighton Yoder on Friday night, which is family night. Attendees can enjoy family-style fajita plates and live music with a safe space to let kids run. Hearing today for DA's lawsuit against county judge by Caitlin Randall. The first hearing for a lawsuit filed against Midland County Judge Terry Johnson by District Attorney Laura Noldoff over the filing of the county budget will be held today. Noldoff filed the civil suit last week alleging Johnson failed to fulfill the duties of a county judge by not filing the budget before the end of July. Local government code mandates the budget be prepared in July. However, County Attorney Russell Malm argued in a response to the lawsuit that the law does not set a deadline for filing the budget with the county clerk. Johnson filed the proposed 2021 fiscal year budget on August 6th. A copy of the proposal available on Midland County's website show it contained changes to the district attorney's office, including moving two units out from under Nodolf's department. The environmental unit, along with the environmental investigators, was moved from the district attorney's office to the emergency management department, and the canine bomb unit was moved to the sheriff's office. Johnson said the changes may be part of the reason for the lawsuit. Nodolf declined to comment on the lawsuit in a statement to the Reporter-Telegram, citing the ongoing litigation. The effect Johnson's filing date may have on the county property tax rate might also be motivation for the lawsuit, according to Johnson and Commissioner Scott Ramsey. Ramsey said the date Johnson filed made it impossible for the commissioner's court to propose a tax rate above 3.5% cap on year-over-year revenue, which would require an election. Ramsey stated he is not seeking such an increase, but that it should have available if that was the intention of anyone on the court. The election code states an election must be ordered by the 78th day before election day to be on the November 3rd ballot. That would make the deadline for an election to be ordered August 17th. But local government code mandates that a public hearing on the tax rate must be held after the 15th day of the month the budget was prepared. If the budget is prepared in July, the earliest a hearing can be held is August 16th. If the budget is considered to have been prepared in August because it was filed in August, however, then a hearing cannot be held before September 16th. Ramsey said he did not want to raise the tax rate above the 3.5% cap or the voter approval rate, but thought the commissioner's court should have the power to do so and not have the decision be nullified based on the date the budget was filed. Thursday's hearing will likely determine whether Johnson's proposed budget is considered to have been prepared in July or August. Maum filed a motion to dismiss the lawsuit a day after the suit was filed. Ector County Judge Stacy Trotter will decide whether to grant the motion to dismiss or move the case forward to a trial. The hearing will be held at 10 a.m. today in the Midland County 441st District Court. Odessa hospitals continue to see case improvement, by J.C. Lewis. Both Odessa hospitals reported improvements in hospital case numbers this week. Odessa Regional Medical Center President Stacy Brown said the six patients reported Wednesday have been the lowest number of coronavirus patients in-house during the pandemic. The hospital has also reported any new coronavirus cases for 24 hours. ORMC Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohith Saravana said it is important not to revert to old ways since the community is starting to see improvement. What we don't want is to go back on the things that have helped us get to this point, he said, because we did the mask mandate in Texas, because we did the social distancing, because we did 50% capacity at certain places, that is how we were able to get to this point. We are improving because of the changes, so we need to stick to what we have been doing, especially with school starting right now, and especially with flu season starting this fall. Medical Center Hospital CEO and President Russell Tippin said the hospital has been holding steady with a COVID-19 patient census in the 20s over the past week. This reinforces the need of masks being worn and what the masks do, he said. Ector County, 733 active cases, 2,880 recovered, 3,670 total cases, 57 deaths. Source, ECHD. Medical Center Hospital, 1,204 positives, 28 coronavirus patients in-house, 15 on 7 and 8 central, 13 in critical care with 8 on ventilators. Patient list includes 1 from Andrews, 2 from Pecos, 1 from Fort Stockton, 3 from Deering Nursing Home, and 1 from Seagraves. 4,325 negatives, 39 pending. Source is MCH. Odessa Medical Regional Medical Center reports 358 positive tests, 6 patients in critical care with 3 on ventilators. Patient list includes 1 from Big Spring and 1 from Andrews. 17 pending tests, 2,177 tested. Source is ORMC. COVID-19 cases decreased to 41 Wednesday. From staff reports, the Midland Health Department reported 41 new coronavirus cases in Midland County on Wednesday. The number of cases was the smallest this week and helps bring the total this week to 235, which is 80 behind the pace set through Wednesday of last week. There are 2,829 COVID-19 cases involving Midland County residents during the pandemic. Other statistics provided in Wednesday's report included 1,360 recovered cases, an increase of 1 compared to Tuesday, and 911 isolated cases. Wednesday's new cases are reflective of lab results from August 11th through the 12th, according to the health department. Coronavirus report this week. Cases Monday, 84. Cases Tuesday, 112. Cases Wednesday, 41. Cases this week, 235. Cases Monday through Wednesday of last week, 315. Total cases, 2,829. ECISD. 1 in 5 students don't have reliable internet. By J.C. Lewis. ECISD kicked off the school year Wednesday with in-person classes for students included in Phase 1 of reopening. The school board met Tuesday night to hear a report on back to school and internet access for students. 1 in 5 ECISD students do not have reliable internet access, according to a press release. Trustees voted 6-0 to approve plans for early childhood and college, career, and military readiness. Trustees voted 6-0 to approve 40% campus hybrid instruction for 9th through 12th grade students. Trustees also voted 6-0 to approve a waiver to extend the start of the 2020-21 school year beyond the 4-week limit. Currently, the ECISD phase-in is shorter than 4 weeks. However, if the presence of coronavirus were to increase, that phase-in period could be extended. This waiver would allow district leaders to make necessary adjustments if an extension is needed. Trustees voted to approve allowing the superintendent to submit waiver requests on behalf of the district. Trustees also voted to approve revisions to the student code of conduct. The changes came after further work with the Equality Task Force and school district administrators. Trustees voted to approve an interlocal agreement with Region 4 for operation connectivity. This cooperative arrangement gives ECISD the ability to purchase devices for about half of the regular price. Through this opportunity, the district will order 5,825 iPads, 6,507 Chromebooks, and 1,000 Wi-Fi devices for about $1.8 million. The regular prices for the same purchases would be closer to $4 million. Report and discussion items. Trustees heard an update on the work to expand broadband to all of Ector County. The school district is working on a plan to help find a long-term solution to provide broadband, high-speed internet access to all students and families throughout the county. A cross-section of community leaders were brought into the study and agreed internet access for all should be a priority project for Ector County. Research shows many gaps in coverage exist locally. The most rural areas typically have the slowest and least reliable internet options, and the district's goal is for all residents to have affordable access to speeds of 100 megabits per second downloads and 10 megabit per second uploads. Trustees saw maps of cell phone towers, data of coverage areas, and learned that 1 in 5 students rarely or never have reliable internet access at home. Superintendent Scott Murray told trustees a panel of national connectivity experts are already working with the district to study the situation and help find a long-term solution for Odessa and Ector County. Trustees received an update on the plans for starting school. Murray walked through the trustees through a brief recap of the plan for starting school Wednesday. By the numbers, it is about 50-50 split between parents choosing remote learning or in-person learning for their student. 2,851 students are registered to ride buses, which is about half of the normal number of riders, and the number of teacher vacancies is down dramatically from 1 year ago. Currently, there are 91 vacancies in elementary school and 31 in secondary school.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, August 13, 2020. New class etiquette. Third and fourth grade teacher, Kaylin Merring, talks to her students about social distancing Tuesday at IDEA Travis Academy. This date in Midland. On August 13, 2000, the first Rock the Desert Christian Music Festival was held on the parking lot of Holy Trinity Episcopal Church. The annual festival then took place at the encampment at Farm to Market Road, 1788 and State Highway 191. At Home Learning Care, Norman Elite will have a virtual learning camp from August 19 through September 15 for those interested. The camp takes place from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Cuthbert Mansion, 3207 Cuthbert Avenue. The cost is $110 weekly. Register at normanelite.com. Know a member of the military coming home? Military families can call 352-0785 or email Vicki Gomez, ZEMOGV, at cableone.net when they know their member of the military is flying into Midland International Airport so the Permian Basin Welcome Home Committee can be there to greet them. Honor those who served. There are many organizations in operation right here in the Permian Basin that are at the task of serving all kinds of needs for present and former members of our military. Some of them are Show of Support, 687-2167, Honor Our Troops, 889-0177, Real Thanks, 528-6633, Centers for Children and Families, 570-1084, Midland College Veterans Affairs Office, 685-4511, Permian Basin Welcome Home Committee, 366-3458, Soldiers of Today and Yesterday, 631-3429. Watering Schedule. The City of Midland has adjusted the lawn and landscaping watering schedule, which will allow residents to water 4 days a week instead of two. Even-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and odd-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. How sick are you? Midland Memorial Hospital offers a nurse triage program, 68 Nurse. The program is designed to help people determine whether their health situation warrants a trip to the emergency room. Midland residents can call the line by dialing 686-8773. The program is free and available 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Local nurses are available to help you determine the best place to receive care for your situation. 68 Nurse can help you save time and money by directing you to the most appropriate healthcare option, whether it's a neighborhood clinic, urgent care center, emergency room, or just staying home. Today in History. Today's Thursday, August 13, the 226th day of 2020. There are 140 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On August 13, 1961, East Germany sealed off the border between Berlin's eastern and western sectors before building a wall that would divide the city for the next 28 years. On this date, in 1932, Adolf Hitler rejected the post of Vice Chancellor of Germany, saying he was prepared to hold out for all or nothing. In 1989, searchers in Ethiopia found the wreckage of a plane that had disappeared almost a week earlier while carrying Representative Mickey Leland, Democrat, Texas, and 14 other people. There were no survivors. In 1995, Baseball Hall of Famer Mickey Mantle died at a Dallas hospital of rapidly spreading liver cancer. He was 63. In 2003, Iraq began pumping crude oil from its northern oil fields for the first time since the start of the war. Libya agreed to set up a $2.7 billion fund for families of the 270 people killed in the 1988 Pan Am bombing. Today's birthdays. Country singer Andy Griggs is 47. Country musician Mike Melancon, Emerson Drive, is 42. Former White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders is 38.
Obituaries. Charles E. Koch. Charles E. Koch of Midland passed away on August 11, 2020, at the age of 91. He was born on December 10, 1928, the middle of five sons born to Kathleen Long Koch and Ferdinand A. Koch. He spent his growing up years in Santa Fe, New Mexico, before enrolling as a teenager in the New Mexico Military Institute in Roswell. Charles graduated from Inman My Junior College with a commission as second lieutenant in the Armored Cavalry in May 1949. He attended Knox College in Galesburg, Illinois, and received a bachelor's of business administration degree, graduating in January 1952. In 1955, Charles moved to Lubbock, Texas to work as a landman for Stanlin Oil and Gas Company. While in Lubbock, Charles met June Ellen Wiley of Lockney, Texas, who was attending Texas Tech's, and they were married in August 1959. Charles and June adopted two children, Christian in 1961 and Gretchen in 1964. Charles was preceded by his wife June in September 1980 and by his son Chris in March 1992. His daughter Gretchen survives him, currently residing in California. Charles married Jane Danilov Wyrant on January 19, 1985, and inherited from that union Jane's 5 children and soon thereafter 11 grandchildren and 4 great-grandchildren. In addition to Jane, Charles is survived by Catherine Cairns of Vancouver, B.C., Canada, and her 2 children, Matthew and Carolyn, by Michelle Jennings of Plano, Texas, and her 4 children, Stephen, Lauren, Kristen, and Andrine, by Gregory B. Wyant and his wife, Ellen and Redmond Washington, and their 3 children, L., Greg, and Rebecca, by Monica Bates and her husband, Brent Bates of Midland, Texas, and their 2 sons, Evan and Zachary, and by Jennifer Heal and her husband, Will Heal of Borney, Texas. In addition, Charles is survived by 2 brothers, Jamie H. Coach and his wife, Neen of Santa Fe, along with their 2 children, Amy and Julie, and by William Christian Coach and his wife, Jean Ellis of Sedgwick, Maine, along with their son, Charles. Diane Woods and Domingo Magana have worked faithfully in the Coach family for over 30 years, and Jane and Charles have gratefully regarded them as part of their family. Charles was a member of St. Anne's Catholic Church. A private family memorial service will be held this week. A celebration of his life to include his many friends will be held in future after COVID-19 health safety precautions have been relaxed. Memorial gifts may be directed to Calm Aquatics Incorporated, 3003 North A Street, Midland, Texas, 79705. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.mpwelch.com. Death notices. Gabriel Valdez Sandoval, Sr. Gabriel Valdez Sandoval, Sr., 54 of Midland, Texas, passed away on Saturday, August 8, 2020, due to heart complications. Viewing will be held at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel, 2508 North Big Spring Street, Midland, Texas, 79705, on Thursday, August 13, 2020, from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. And talk will be held that evening at 7 p.m. Funeral services will be on Friday, August 14, 2020, at 9 a.m. Gabriel is survived by his parents, Sylvester Sandoval and Armandina Valdez, 2 brothers, Odell Sandoval and Samuel Sandoval, and his 4 children, Gabriel Sandoval Jr. and wife Jessica, Crystal Garcia and husband Johnny, Crystal Sandoval and Cecilia Sandoval, all from Midland, Texas. Jimmy Stevens. Jimmy Stevens, 39 of Midland, passed away August 8, 2020. The family will receive guests from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday, August 14, 2020, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, August 15, 2020, at Stonegate Fellowship, with intermittent falling at Serenity Memorial Garden Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.mpwelch.com. Lerna K. Randolph. Lerna K. Randolph, 86 of Midland, passed away on Tuesday, August 11, 2020. The family will receive friends on Friday, August 14, 2020, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held on Saturday, August 15th, 2020 at 2 p.m. at Natalie Picklin Wells Chapel.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.